Ready?
1 second.
It's recording.
It's recording.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Unforced Error. Unforced Errors? What is it, David?
It's Welcome to Unforced Error, where we talk about unforced errors.
I like that. Yeah, it's a good distinction. Probably costs more on the poster, unforced errors, but I think it's worth it.
Yep.
So yeah, unforced errors for the uninitiated is two old guys talking about tennis and saying the things that the people on TV are too scared to say. It's the thinking man's talk sport, really. And you join us at the end of March 2022. The clocks have just gone forward. Do you have this in Portugal and Andorra, David, where they muck around with the clocks?
In Portugal, yes. Not in Macau.
Not in Macau. I envy Macau because I'm one of those crazy people who thinks we should keep the clocks the same as they are.
They should always
all the year round.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in today's episode, we'll be going back in time, building the perfect tennis player. So what players from the past, what players from the present, and what up-and-coming players, what shots would you take from each player to build the perfect player? Have you got an idea in your head, David, of the perfect player? Is it a man, a woman? What height are they? What do you think God looks like, I suppose, isn't it? Are they tall? Are they short?
They're definitely tall. Not too tall.
What height are you?
I'm 1.93 meters, which is 6'4".
I think that's a good height for the perfect tennis player, no? For a male perfect tennis player.
I would say 1.85 meters. So that would be probably 6'2", 6'1". I think that's the perfect height.
Yes.
Not too tall, but still tall enough to have good serves.
Hard to lob if you're tall, isn't it?
Hard to lob.
Your opponent think twice about lobbing.
Light bones to run quickly.
More back problems, maybe, the taller
definitely
you are.
Definitely more back
problems. That's a drawback.
Yes,
so-called little guys can scurry around more.
That's
the Schwartzmans.
That's true.
The Agassis, although they're not short by the man on the street standards, are they?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, on the same subject, do you think muscular is best? If you were building in your laboratory the perfect player, what physique would you come up with?
Yeah, it's definitely the type Federer, Djokovic, Medvedev, slim.
Slim,
not
yeah.
I think Nadal is already too much.
Yes, he's not as muscular as he used to be. Maybe that's to cut down on the injuries.
Maybe.
But yeah, I agree. I think the perfect tennis player should look almost as if they're just naturally fit. They've got good genes rather than they've got their physique through pumping iron down the gym.
That's true. It adds extra weight. And you know, we've seen women tennis players with so much power and no muscle, really. So if you want to generate power, yeah, it can be done without all those muscles in your body.
Serena's body shape has changed over the years because she definitely has got bigger, more muscular. And I've noticed this is happening to Naomi Osaka too.
It is,
Her body shape is definitely changing. She's got big arms now, really. So I'd wonder if that happened naturally. I'm not suggesting that she used chemicals to get that body. I wonder if it was a conscious decision to kind of have that body shape.
Yeah, it must be like part of all the training and the
diet
plan, exactly. Definitely there's something there that they want to achieve with their bodies, especially as tennis players, isn't it?
Yes, they must do. They cover all angles.
At least some of them.
Yeah, so talking about planning, my rough idea was, you know, let's build the perfect tennis player by kind of categories. So I drew up a list of categories.
Please
and you
do.
Added a few, and so did other people. Steve had a few suggestions too. So I think there's going to be maybe about 15.
Sounds great.
Should we start off with what I think, please disagree if you like, is maybe the most important attribute. If you're building the perfect tennis player, if you only got time for one, it's the only shot you can really control. One of only two shots you can really kick off the rally with it. First serve. Would you agree? Is that maybe the most vital attribute for building the perfect tennis player?
I would say forehand or backhand.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
At professional level, the first serve is maybe more important than at my lower public courts level.
Yeah.
But at professional level, you'll get eaten alive if you got a poor first serve.
No, it's a very good point. If you have a really great serve, you already have almost half of the match won, more or less. But then if you don't have if you have a great serve, like Isner has a bombastic serve, but that doesn't have an awesome forehand and backhand, he ends up not really achieving great results.
Well said. I mean, it's the combination, really, isn't it?
You have to have something
solid.
Your follow-up
shot.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have something solid, because let's not forget, the serve is one shot per rally, whereas it can be up to 30 forehands in one rally or more.
Very true. I think getting a good first serving gives you confidence
for
the rally.
Yes.
Puts you on the front foot. You don't have to worry about the second serve. Will that second serve go in?
Yes.
Is it going to hit the net? It takes away the worry of the second serve.
Like Zverev.
So I think it's a great building block.
Yeah, and even if you're not very good with any other shot, if you already have the advantage of a great serve, most probably the second shot after the serve will be much easier.
Well, possibly the greatest combination in tennis. I didn't have him as the best server of all time in my list. First server of all time, Roger Federer, very close. But he's got that follow-up forehand. He's got that combination, almost like a jab and then a hook.
He really does.
They're like two hooks, really, where, you know, he'll do a great serve, puts the opponent, even the Djokovic, on the back foot. And then he's a step inside the court for that forehand, which he will normally hit for a winner.
That's true. And it's a...
best combination in the game.
It's a deadly combination, it really is. So let me ask you, let's say now some genie comes up and tells you, Jim, I can improve one feature of your tennis skills. Which one would you choose?
Oh, that's such a good question. I'd probably argue with the genie and say, look, can I have 10?
No. You can only have one.
I think a down-the-line shot would be great, because
any of
that's the shot
I
probably I struggle with. And when I see it on TV, I think,
that's the most important
do they do
shot
that?
Almost.
Down-the-line shot over the highest part of the net.
That's probably the
very
most
little
important
margin for error. Mm-hmm. And I think at my level, so many of us go cross-court. That's the easy option.
So many.
Which is great. It's lovely to have that. But then suddenly you can change it.
It doesn't
the
same damage.
Just the click of a fingers, these professionals down the line.
See enough tennis, anybody will understand that the down the lines are the game changers. They really are, more often than not. This is where you surprise your opponent. This is where he's not expecting the shot.
Yeah.
The cross courts are the easy shots. Down the lines, they define a great tennis player.
Yeah, I mean, when Brad Gilbert took over coaching Andre Agassi, he saw Andre Agassi's backhand down the line, and he said that backhand down the line is going to win you hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It was great, yeah.
Definitely. And it did. It was cash in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a great one. Right back at you, Bobby Brown. What would the genie grant you if you had a wish? What shot?
Yeah, I'm in love with the backhand.
Well, you got a good backhand.
Yeah, good. If I'm choosing the thing that most attracts me, it's definitely the backhand. Whichever shot, doesn't really matter.
A double-handed backhand, that's what you've got.
Exactly.
That's what you'd get from the genie.
I
want to upgrade it.
I could ask the genie for one-handed, isn't it?
Yeah,
I don't think
you could upgrade your double-handed backhand. You can hit winners off it. Not many people can.
Yes, I'm very happy with double hand for sure.
Oh, well, we'll get onto that later. But
So speaking of the first serve, first attribute.
First category.
Thank you very much. Who do you choose for first serve?
First backtracking to old school, I'm the man from the past. John McEnroe, very good, very unique wind-up action. Really bends his legs, which is something I don't do in my serve.
Very
important. You should do. It looks good, if nothing else.
True.
An old player called Roscoe Tanner, who, like Goran Ivanišević, had quite a low serve toss.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite unusual. So it didn't seem to be much effort, but amazing. Obviously, Federer. Boris Becker, aesthetically pleasing. I love the way he rocked back and forth before unleashing his first serve. Really great
Kyrgios
body.
Kyrgios has a bit of that.
Body weight. Of course, Kyrgios asking people in the crowd, where shall I serve? And a lot of the pros, when they were building the perfect tennis player, they choose Kyrgios of the modern Monday players. But I'm going to go for maybe not the most aesthetically pleasing, but I think the best first serve of all time. Sorry, Goran Ivanišević. Pete Sampras, I would say, the best first serve.
I think even though there's so many good serves out there, there's no doubt that Pete Sampras had the best first and second serve of all time.
Yeah, spoiler alert, I'm going to choose him for second serve.
Yeah, me too.
I can't see much difference between his first serve
and
his second serve. And yourself?
Yeah, it's Sampras. There's nobody else that ever served like Sampras I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Federer is really good, but he will crumble sometimes.
Yeah.
Kyrgios is fantastic. Medvedev these days is incredible. Ivanišević is amazing. Isner is amazing. But they all falter at some point. Whereas with Sampras, I always felt that it just didn't crumble under pressure. He always had the serve ready.
Always came up with the goods.
Always came up. That's why he dominated his area more than the other players.
Yeah.
So, yes, first and second serve.
That's easy. It's going easy so far. You know, ours isn't the only opinion. Steve Milanos, one of our listeners, nominated John Isner. As do many of the pros. They tend to go for Isner or Kyrgios. And the women of the women, you know, these categories are open to men and women, of course.
Definitely. There are skills in some women that are definitely worth paying attention to. I mean, if we had to choose women, you don't have to look anywhere else.
Of course. I mean, Heather Watson is the obvious choice. Oh, sorry. You're thinking of someone else. Give the other girls a chance. We can't name Heather.
Serena.
Yeah, I mean, fantastic. It's
just unbelievable. And Serena serve better than many. Most men in the tour, to be honest.
In terms of speed, it's not far off.
Not far off even.
You know, some
there's been a few tournaments where men and women competed. And Serena had more aces than any man or woman at the end of the tournament.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's the serve for a woman for sure.
Yeah. So,
next in line.
Category three, it rhymes with Wally. Folly. Connected to the serve, often.
Now, that's a special...
Are we building a perfect player for singles or doubles or both? We want them to earn, bring back
that's
some money
point.
To the laboratory. So if they could do doubles as well, that's...
Yes, I think we're building the perfect tennis player. It's the player that will play anywhere, any surface, any type of tennis, even triples.
It's important, isn't it?
He can do it.
Yeah, triples.
Or she.
Could be the next sport, couldn't it?
Yes. So, yes, we're building the perfect tennis player for everything. So volleys, of course, are very important. Just a note on volleys. Volleys are a special shot. They're very satisfying when you finish a ball in the face of your opponent. You feel empowered, don't you? There's something about the volley that feels really good.
Yeah, it's like a fencer putting a sword through an opponent, isn't it?
It's
really,
it's wonderful.
And it takes courage. Sometimes that ball's coming to you really fast.
Yes.
And you just make it die.
Yes.
Or you use the speed.
Good reactions.
So, yeah, it's a dying art, really, isn't it, in singles? So who would you use as a template for your volleying skills of this robot?
Volleys is a very difficult answer for me because I was not really following tennis when volleys were the number one thing in tennis.
You were in your cot.
Yeah, so I think probably the best volleys have been from players in the past. Maybe Becker, isn't it? Edberg?
Edberg. He wasn't one of my favorite players, Becker and Edberg. Yeah,
exactly.
Federer's ex-coach.
That's the one. But of course, if I speak out of my experience of watching tennis in the last three decades of my life, I choose Federer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to look beyond him.
He really is. He has all the shots.
I mean, who else is there really?
Stephen
nominated Jack Sock, but more from a doubles point of
view.
That's true. Because he's very good at... But the key to being a great volleyer in the singles, which is different to the doubles, is how good is your approach shot.
That's true.
So you can be a great volleyer, but you need the right shot to come into. And it's fine in doubles. You're standing there anyway, like a fisherman waiting by the riverbank.
It's true, yeah.
But back in the old days, just to briefly enlighten you, McEnroe was a great volleyer.
He was, wasn't he?
Of the ball, and he played doubles very regularly, took it very seriously, doubles. So, yeah, that's probably why he was a good volleyer.
And let's not forget, we had that classic match with old rackets. It's hard to hit volleys with those little rackets.
Yeah, I still wake up with a start in the middle of the night remembering you rolling around on the grass. Like
fun.
Boris Becker, a great volleyer too. Martina Navratilova was very good at serving volley too. So I think she should get a mention. But I would pick Federer.
As well, even you that comes from a different older generation.
Yeah, so there's
improvement there, isn't there?
Unanimity there. Steve's different again.
Steve is probably going to be different from us.
Very good volleyer, Steve.
Yes, there
you go. Singles and doubles.
We have to say that. And let him mention someone that is always overlooked, Nadal. He's phenomenal at the net.
One of the commentators said yesterday or the day before, said, he's really underrated. You know, when he comes to the net, he very rarely loses the point. He chooses
very
the right
rarely.
Moment.
Yes, they're very good. And I'll say someone that probably is better than all of these people we're talking about. Brown.
Dustin Brown, right, yeah.
That guy.
Another Boris Becker flings himself
guy,
around
man,
on the grass.
With the volleys yeah. is something else.
Well, I'm glad he got a mention. Yeah, he's one of my favourite players, Dustin Brown.
Okay, next.
The smash.
The smash.
Overhead.
A
slam dunk.
I mean, it's usually chosen between, again, Federer or Sampras, and I'll go with Federer.
Okay.
Again.
Good. Yeah, I will go with Sampras because he did that basketball slam dunk thing.
He was spectacular.
Which I think Kyrgios probably and Monfils
as well, yes.
do as well.
And I've seen Federer do it as well, but nobody did it like Sampras.
And let's not forget the smash. It's an important one. Another listener, Leon, said that he's read that not many pros practice the smash. They don't see it as that important a shot. And there are some players out there who aren't very good at the smash.
Actually. It's true.
But Djokovic mucks up the odd smash, doesn't he? He became quite famous for it.
He does.
So it's a vital skill.
Yes, and you never know when the smash will be a very important point.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it should be a banker shot, really. It's like serving from near the net. You would think, but the easiest shots are the hardest in tennis.
Yeah, I think most pro players are good at smashing until the pressure is on. Then you can see the difference between, and that's where, for me, Federer wins. I mean, he's almost 100% perfect when it comes to smashes. And Nadal,
with
that curved smash, he barely ever...
It's a top spin smash, really, isn't it?
Misses. Yeah. It's just
or slice,
unreal.
Slice smash. Yeah.
So we got good contenders here. Very good contenders.
Yeah, absolutely. Really important shot, I think.
Next.
Well, it's got to be the one you think that is the most important one. You might well be right. The forehands.
Oh, yes. Now we have an endless number of great forehands in the tennis world. I mean, there's so many good forehanders.
Especially amongst the men, I think. The men... tend to have great forehands. The women tend to have
thinking,
better backhands.
That's so true. In ping pong, it's the same. Yes, I mean, Serena's forehand is massive, but it's unreliable sometimes. Federer's is just one of the most stunning and powerful forehands, but it's unreliable in some pressure moments.
Yeah, it can go,
Nadal
can't it?
Nadal has a little bit of an edge there, doesn't he? Do you think just because of the reliability or not at all? And what about Djokovic? I mean, Djokovic's forehand tends to be also good, but his best shot is the backhand. Who do you have in mind?
There's lots of them. I'm going to agree with Steve on this one and go for Delpo, Juan Martín Del Potro of Argentina.
It's unreal.
Because his was so powerful, and unlike Serena's, it was seemed to be effortless power. There was no grunting. He kind of swung his racket from above the ball, which is unusual too. And it's just like a hammer.
And I never understood one thing about Del Potro's forehand. He rarely misses it.
It was just...
It's strange how he creates so much power, and it's almost always in.
It would draw gasps from the crowd sometimes, how hard he was hitting it. He would just swing it like the hammer of Thor or something like that. It was just... You know, you felt sorry for the ball, and like, how did the ball stand up to that pressure?
Poor ball. I often think about the balls.
So many great
tennis ball.
Yeah, so many great contenders. Safin, I thought, had a great forehand as well. Yeah, Nadal has that top spin, doesn't it? And probably we'll get onto this later on if you're going to include the inside-out forehand.
Yeah, of course,
I would think maybe Nadal has the best inside-out forehand. Just running around the ball so quickly, even though he's got a good backhand, just to create that extra angle on clay. And just that extra bit of variety, if there's a backhand exchange, he'll suddenly run round and just clout it with topspin.
Yes, it's very true. Is there anything on all the other forehands that we left behind that Del Potro doesn't have?
Well, any elements of the forehand?
Mm-hmm.
He could run around it, maybe not as well as Nadal. Possibly the angles.
Short angles.
He wouldn't go for it, but he didn't really need to.
But that's something that removes a little bit of the variety of forehands. Because, you know, Del Potro has this authoritarian forehand. It's a missile.
Bullying bullet.
But it's very uniform. It tends to be always that powerful shot that hits far away.
Great for building up a rhythm,
It's wonderful. I mean, it's wonderful. But... there are forehands out there with more variety and more more shape.
We're forgetting that the forehand drop shot is a much more common shot.
For example?
Now, in fact, it seems to be more common than the backhand drop shot.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know, the Fajinis and people like that who don't belt the ball so much, they can disguise that and do a great kind of forehand drop shot. So, yeah, we are neglecting that. And there's something to be said for angles and... there are many ways to skin a cat. You can stroke a cat or you can give it a vigorous tickle.
Yeah, I would definitely be in between Nadal and Federer. I'll go with Federer because I like him more. I think I would take Federer's forehand.
Would you rather face Federer's forehand or Nadal's forehand?
Federer's, because he has less topspin.
Sure, but you prefer the actual look of Federer's.
And not only look, variety. He also has more variety than Nadal's. There is something special there. So yeah, next.
Good. I would say the backhand has to be after the forehand, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
What came first, the chicken or the egg? I think people would say the forehand came before the backhand.
Yes. Look, I think that we can definitely mention women here a little bit. Serena's backhand is really, really great and sometimes more reliable than the forehand. Even Venus had a wonderful backhand.
First mention of her this episode.
Yes. Back in her prime days, really good backhands.
Steffi Graf, sliced backhand.
Yeah, sliced backhand.
Ash Barty,
really good. But all roads lead to one backhand. It's Djokovic's.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic backhand, absolutely.
But you have another opinion? You're still thinking about this?
I have a double-handed backhand. You mentioned double-handed backhands, but yeah. is our perfect
Dominic
player.
Dominic Thiem.
Yeah, fantastic, DT. Is our perfect player going to have a single-handed?
It has to be a double.
Which is more versatile? If you were born again, and would you still have your double-handed?
Definitely.
Or would you try and develop?
Yeah, good question, but
because
definitely.
The advantage is with the double hand is better for
it's
counter-attacking,
safer.
More
defending.
Solid, but... You can disguise a drop shot better with a single-handed. You can switch to a volley more easily.
True.
That lovely Sampras backhand smash, maybe one of the most difficult shots
amazing.
In the game to do.
Harder
so,
for a double-handed.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for single-handed backhands. So I would say Gasquet's got a lovely single-handed, very artistic. Not maybe
true, but lacks power.
Better than his other shots. Stan Wawrinka, wow.
There we go, now we're talking.
What a single-handed. I was very tempted to go for him. But I'm going to go for Justine Henin-Ardenne, the Belgian lady from, I suppose, about 15 years ago, was she? She had an amazing single-handed backhand. Worth checking out on YouTube. I remember McEnroe saying he wasn't sure that wasn't the best backhand in the women's and the men's game. I think she'd won the French Open 3 times in a row and she retired very suddenly. Could have had a big rivalry with Serena Williams, but like Ash Barty, she's one of these ones who retired. She tried to come back to win Wimbledon, but yeah, I'm going to go for Justine Henin-Ardenne. I can pick her safe in the knowledge that Steve picked Wawrinka, who was my close second choice. So he's not left out there. And Djokovic, well, yeah, great choice as well. But I'm going to go for Justine, just about.
Okay, wow. How about that? So on the same category, now after forehand and backhand, let me just ask quickly, what slice shot would you choose?
I suppose I don't think about it too much because I don't really do a slice, but it is a great weapon. Going back years ago, Verlander developed a slice halfway through his career, which helped him win extra Grand Slams. Definitely Steffi Graf. Very good. Ash Barty as well. Yeah, there are ones out there. And it's something I hate to play against. It takes the speed off it. I would say Murray maybe for the best slice backhand. He rakes it cross court, nice angle. And it's very reliable. It doesn't go in the tram lines. It's a very cute shot.
Yeah, I definitely go with Federer for the slice.
He makes the ball talk, really, I think.
It's
yeah.
True. All right, next.
On a similar line, I would say we've had the serves and that's the turn of the return. Something I don't practice.
That's
I would
my
love
favorite.
To. When people practice serves before a match, they don't like it if you return either. It's like, oh, it's an extra ball I've got to chuck back at you. But I think it's a very important shot, the return.
It's my favorite part of my game.
But you don't practice it.
You practice it every match, no?
Yes.
So many returns of serves you have to do.
Yeah, you could practice it in practice. Take those chances
for me, practice
without
is a match.
Losing.
True.
Yeah.
So who do you choose for your best return of serve?
Going back in the past, Borg was very good. He used to stand back very far for the big servers like Roscoe Tanner. Great return of serve. Jimmy Connors had a great return of serve. Boris Becker, very underrated return of serve. I think Sampras said he had the best return of serve he faced. Sampras put Becker above Agassi for return of serve.
Wow.
Who had a great return of serve. I remember one Wimbledon, Philippoussis doing the record serve for that year's Wimbledon, the highest speed, and Agassi stepped inside the court and hit a winner off it.
Yes.
And it wasn't a fluke, which he held his hand up for afterwards. This was, he had his eye in. He was seeing the ball like a basketball that day. Really good. But I think there's only one person, really, they won easily, even after mentioning all these great returners. Djokovic, he can face a fantastic serve.
It's unbelievable.
Scramble at full stretch and somehow return the ball onto the server's toes at the baseline.
It's just unreal.
So, yeah,
unreal.
He is the king.
He really is
the king of returns.
No, we had a king, which was Agassi, but then the throne
usurped.
Was taken from it.
Yeah.
Usurped,
yeah.
That's the word?
Yeah.
That's it. I'll say there's a new return of serve. It's coming now to the world and maybe will end up being one of the best in the world.
I think I know who you
Medvedev.
Mean. Yes.
Because
very
he
good,
stands
yeah.
back, but then in two shots he's back at the baseline.
Yeah. He's like a wolf. He almost licks his lips before, you know, advancing up the court.
And he hits bullets from miles away. You know, he returns deep. And,
yeah.
and it's a really difficult shot for the opponent to
yeah,
attack.
Yeah, long-range missiles, aren't they?
So that's a new type of
and
return.
You can really,
that
if you stand back, you can really have a swing at the ball.
You can, yeah. So I also choose Djokovic as you do, but in a few years' time, we might have a different opinion.
And Steve makes it a clean sweep there. He's also gone for Djokovic. Well, Steve's a big Nadal fan, and he actually did, I forgot to mention this, he did choose Nadal for the best smash.
It's incredible. Next.
Well, something after your own heart, David. I think you're good at this. Fitness.
Good one. Fitness is, I guess, is the most essential part of pro tennis because without fitness, there's no playing tennis.
Yeah, so fitness can encompass different things. It's really how you're feeling, I suppose, in the fifth set after long rallies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, are you going to make the starting line? Are you actually going to be fit for the tournament and not have an injury? Are you good at avoiding injuries? That's how what it is
all
to me.
All of it, yes. And
yeah.
I think if you include all these features about the fitness, there's one player in the world that is above everybody else. Let's not forget fitness also includes longevity.
Yes. So, yeah, quite a few spring to mind because there have been so many fit players over the years. It's quite rare to see an unfit player. I don't want to shame any
David
player.
David Ferrer.
Yes, he got mentioned by quite a few pros. Bjorn Borg, incredible fitness going back. Fellow tennis player John Lloyd once asked him after his career, and he said, I've never seen you tired during a tennis match. And were you ever tired? And Borg thought about this for a while, and he said, I was tired. Yeah, I did get tired once. It was in the fifth set against Ivan Lendl in the French Open final. Around about the fourth game, I suddenly thought, I'm really tired. But it only lasted the game. And that was the only time in his career he felt tired. I'd feel tired before I even start a match.
Yes.
Ivan Lendl, incredible fitness. You know, he used to cycle on his days off. Djokovic, obviously incredibly fit. I would say Federer, though. I never see him really out of breath. He's avoided injuries for a long part of his career. Okay, he started getting injured 34, 35, but until then, an amazing unbroken run. So Federer and fitness, again, it trips off the tongue, doesn't it? I think Steve went for Djokovic.
And I'm also very curious about Medvedev, because right now Medvedev is probably the fittest tennis player on earth right now.
Yeah.
So he is a great contender. Now,
you wouldn't think he was that fit when you look at him, really. You think he
fit and fast. The body has all the attributes and tall. I mean, it has
and
light.
Very tall, yeah.
So and he gets everywhere. He gets to everything. So I'm going with Federer because we've been watching him for 3 decades. For everything. For the longevity, for the lack of injury, for what you said, never out of breath, always contained. It's almost like the energy of his body is natural body for tennis and for other sports. I think Djokovic is a good pick, but Djokovic needed to change his diet. And that tells a little bit about the body not being naturally perfect. He had to work hard to get there, whereas Federer has been natural at it. He often said that he would have an ice cream here and there and enjoy his desserts and have a less strict diet and still have a body that is always ready and fit. And only now at the latest stage of his life, of course, it's breaking down. So yeah, Federer, the same. All right, next.
Attitude.
Mentality.
What's in between
is
your ears?
Is that mentality?
Yeah,
or attitude,
mentality,
or are they different?
You know, resilience, I think you mentioned earlier
so,
when you were texting.
Attitude, mentality, resilience,
yeah,
all in one, yeah?
Your brain strength, you know, your kind of demeanor.
Yes, that's a good one. So do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
Yeah, I think you've got a good attitude on the court. You never seem annoyed, which doesn't give me or opponents any advantage.
Mm.
So I think you've got the kind of attitude which is good. So do you value it?
Definitely value it. I love using it on court. Of course, we're not pro players, so this is different. But for me, the attitude comes from enjoying what you're doing. You know, we meet a few days a week in a tennis court, and the reason why I go there is because I want to have fun. And I know losing sucks, but ultimately, we're there to have fun. It's very difficult to be losing. But also, when you're losing and there's still a chance, until the last point, you leave the anger to the last moment where you really lose. Until then, we know tennis is special for that same reason. You can always come back at any time, at any moment, if you connect to it. And so we jump too harshly and too quickly into despair and anger and swearing and throwing records. And
oh, you like to watch that, don't
you? It's
great.
I love it. But
professionally,
I'm talking in our level.
At our
professionally
level,
is different.
It's different, yeah.
Yes, because professionally you want to win because it pays your bills. It's your dream to be the best. So yes, who has the better mentality, the best attitude in a tennis court?
At the risk of repeating ourselves.
There's two players at least for me.
Put me out of my misery.
Attitude, mentality, resilience, resistance, all coming from the head, from the mind, is Djokovic and Nadal.
Ah, I thought you were going to say Federer because you mentioned fun, and I think Federer enjoys his tennis, and that comes through.
That is very true.
He doesn't make a song and dance about it.
That is true. Although, for competitiveness in the pro tour, enjoying might be less important than the resilience that, for example, Djokovic has. That's why Djokovic won the most incredible matches against Federer.
Well, maybe someone like Djokovic would say, winning is fun.
Yes, maybe that's true. And not only, let's not forget, we can also talk about Nadal's attitude, every point the same exact. There's nobody like Nadal. Not even Djokovic is like Nadal.
So gun against
every
your head.
Point.
Are you going to choose for attitude, Djokovic or Nadal?
Yeah, I think we would have to put it into different categories, isn't it? Attitude, Nadal. Resilience, Djokovic, and resistance. Fun and enjoyment, good, positive attitude, Federer. So it's a very mixed bag, isn't it? What do you think?
Yeah, I concur with all of what you said. I would say in terms of resilience and attitude, I would probably agree with Steve on this. I would pick Nadal. Because I think sometimes Djokovic's attitude just goes a bit too far.
He goes, he disappears.
Of, you know, if you're building the perfect player, you want them to walk the line sometimes, but you don't want them to be at risk of disqualification. And I think sometimes with the Zverevs of this world, wow, what a let-off he got with his punishments, so-called punishment recently.
Sure, yes.
And Djokovic, you know, you wouldn't bet against them being disqualified from a tournament sometimes. I feel sorry for Djokovic.
Hey, it happened once. We can't judge him.
Maybe I'm being a bit...
Yes, I think once, and it was unluck. It was a bad moment. It's a good point you make.
But he's going to be tested every tournament, Djokovic, because he seems to be the villain with idiotic elements of the crowd sometimes.
True, but let's not forget one thing, Jim. That moment that he was disqualified, he already had made history for 10, 15 years. That's a funny thing, and this is a good debate, because Nadal has definitely the best mentality when it comes to staying point after point.
He's
connected.
Not going to get disqualified, is he, Nadal?
No, and not only, he's not going to let go of any point.
Kyrgios will be taunting him. He doesn't let it get under his skin.
No, he doesn't. But Djokovic goes up and down, but he's always the winner at the end, or most of the time. So I think there's something about Djokovic and might come from what he was talking about, coming from a history of a country in war and having had hardships in the past, made him tough. And I think that's why he won the most important matches against Nadal and the most important matches against Federer. It's a great debate.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about tough genes and Djokovic, you know, coming from a tough background. His country's had to be tough. I would also say Medvedev, in a way. Contrast Medvedev, the way he kind of deals with the crowd and Djokovic. And it seems to fire him up. He's made a decision. I'm going to have some fun with this, really.
That is another category on its own.
And I love the fact someone's giving a boring speech after a Grand Slam and he's like saying, this is boring.
Yes.
And the same with Kyrgios. You would think I'm mad for mentioning Kyrgios in their attitude. But I think Kyrgios has got it in his head that he's an entertainer. And okay, sometimes that does cost him. But I think, that's a great way to have fun, to ask someone in the crowd, okay, where should I put it? So there are times when I like Kyrgios's attitude.
And not only Kyrgios being a little bit like a whatever attitude, which gives him this ability to do shots that he doesn't need to, that entertains the crowd.
The unpredictability.
Is
he
going
to get out of the left side of the bed today? Is he going to sleep upside down?
Exactly.
He's one of these guys, isn't he?
Yeah, I think those two mentions, Medvedev and Kyrgios, is great. The problem with those two still to today is that they have a downside, which is when they are pissed off or angry, they really lose all the control, worse than Djokovic.
Medvedev still loses matches you think
because
he's in control of.
He does.
You know,
more than
these top players.
Definitely. That's why these three still win, Djokovic, Federer and Nadal. I would even put this answer, because he has so many categories in one category, the three top best players of all time in mentality. Because those three, you combine those three, Nadal's point by point, Federer's positiveness, and Djokovic's resilience and surviving skills, you have an insane tennis player when it comes to mentality.
And that would be a Frankenstein's monster.
Oh,
and let's not forget the ghost from the past, Bjorn Borg. He'd come into the changing room after a match. You couldn't tell whether he'd won or he'd lost.
Yes.
And I think that's a great thing and very hard
really
to play
good.
Against.
Mm-hmm.
Someone like Murray, great player though he is, you know, the shoulders slump, the head's shaking, he's muttering darkly to his box.
It's so
playing against a player
watch.
Like that, just really, I find is really encouraging. It really puts a spring in my step.
It's,
if your opponent is like acting like it's a Shakespearean tragedy,
it is a problem. Murray has a terrible attitude, even
now. People have been saying that for years, but he just won't change. Hey,
he
resilience.
It's
he knows
strange.
People say it, and he won't change.
Yeah, there's a survivalist in Murray in his prime days, but yes, even now I've seen him play yesterday and it was, my God. Okay, next, drop shot and then lobbed. Who do you choose?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with Steve a lot here. People think he's paying me, but Murray's lob, a great shot, and together with something like Agassi's down the line, Gaston's drop shots at the French Open, was it last year or the year before, were absolutely beautiful as well. So there's a few starters to get you thinking. What about you?
Yes, Murray's lob and drop shot, Federer, for sure. Everyone hits a good drop shot these days, to be honest. So
maybe
yes.
A shot you don't see too often. I mean, I love Federer's kind of just racing in on the return. What was that called? The Rabona or something like that? The Sabre.
The Sabre.
The Sabre. I can't remember why it's called the Sabre. It's an acronym, I think.
Sneak attack by Roger.
Yeah, I love that. And it's a nonplussed Djokovic for a while until Djokovic really got a hold of it.
Kyrgios got a hold of that shot as well.
Yeah, oh, of course, Kyrgios's drop shot serve. I love that. I don't have the nerve to play it in proper tournament matches.
Yeah.
What a coward I am. But I'd love to, because I think it's a legitimate thing. But I think it would piss a few opponents off. And one shot, again, Federer just unveiled, I think, in the Wimbledon final against Murray, which he won, was shaping up to do a drop shot. Murray comes in and then Federer holds the ball on his strings and just hits it to the baseline. Passing shot.
Magic shot, man.
So, yeah.
Definitely.
Those are my wild cards.
Yes, and creativity.
Tactically or
improvising? Well, creativity can come from wherever you want it to come from. It just has to show on court.
And that's imagination.
Yes, imagination. It's what made Federer the player that is so loved, isn't it? The creativity he has. Kyrgios has to be mentioned. And, of course, I think probably the number one will be Brown, no?
Was it Brown Kyrgios? Did you send me a YouTube link?
The best match of all
time. I didn't know they played each other. It's just, it's like seeing Muhammad Ali take on Rocky Stallone. I just didn't think their paths had crossed.
Yeah.
And it lived up to the hype.
Yes, it's one of the best matches I've ever watched.
Yeah.
So who would you say is the most creative player then?
I always think that Fagini looks quite creative to me. He's kind of he's a real pest and a nuisance, and he'll stick the pin in not quite where you're expecting the pin to go in your body, like
that's
a voodoo doll.
Yeah, Fognini is a good is
Fognini.
A good idea,
yeah,
yes.
One of my favorite players. Monfils magics up stuff almost, almost deliberately gets himself in a hole just to show how just good his Houdini skills.
And there's fitness there as well for him, even though
and
he
athleticism.
Always looks like athleticism.
Him and Djokovic, you know, they both obviously were very good at the splits in their gymnastic classes at school, I'd imagine.
Yep, definitely.
Made of rubber.
Yes. What about the physics of the ball and the racket? Forget technique, forget everything else, just the logic of what is two human beings with two sticks and a ball. I think one player to me, and this is my only women's mention, the best of all time is Shuai.
Yeah, one of your favorite players. Yes. What is it about Shuai exactly?
Shuai redirects the ball. She creates power from the most simple shot. It's almost like she learned how to play tennis in the backyard with some ball and some stick. And then she learned that to play tennis, all you need to do is put the racket in the right position for the ball to go to the other side and hit the corner
it's something we don't practice, because in practice we hit the ball to
each other.
I think it becomes almost natural not to attack the spaces, but to actually play the ball to your opponents.
Yeah.
It's almost to encourage a rally, but she is, redirecting.
It's wonderful. I find redirection of tennis balls in a tennis match one of the most beautiful things.
But isn't it tricky? Because depending on the spin that's put on the ball, redirecting, you think, okay, someone's playing cross court, I'm going to hit it down the line. But the spin is such, it's quite hard to redirect.
True, but ask that question to Shuai. She does it for breakfast.
Yeah.
She redirects anything you throw at her.
Yeah, it's good to see.
Yeah. And here's another one, talent. Who is the most talented player of all time?
I would say Federer. It just looks like...
Kyrgios can compete with him?
Yeah.
Because even though he was not so successful as Federer, that guy bursts with talent.
I think Kyrgios is more of a kind of maverick talent.
Yes.
He's almost like a very talented sportsman, like a very good basketball player who's taken up tennis just for a laugh and found, oh, actually, I'm really good at this.
That's
and I'm going
to
try
this. That's a good way to put it.
Whereas Federer seems like he was just...
It's tennis in itself.
You know, he was shown to a coach at 5 years old and the coach says, hang on, have you been coached before?
Yes.
I just get that impression.
And that's where he wins.
He'd say, oh, it's not like that. Yeah. I was useless. I was hitting the ball in the net.
Yes.
But I'd say, and if very simple, if you are building your perfect tennis player and we just had a 1 minute UFE episode, I'd say Federer maybe with Wawrinka or Ene Nadal's backhand.
I agree.
Federer with the Wawrinka backhand, you'd probably have pretty much the perfect player.
Federer would have had more than 30 Grand Slams. He would have beaten Djokovic and Nadal a lot more times. But then we have players like Djokovic. There's no weakness in any side.
And it's strange, I think, doing these lists, how often Djokovic didn't come out on top, I found. And yet, if you were to name the best player of all time, he would be right up there for me. He's not the best shot in all these categories, but he'd probably be the top 10 in all of them. Whereas a lot of them, like, say, Del Potro, would be number one in one category, but nowhere to be seen on some other categories.
Yeah.
The best player isn't always the one with the best shot.
Exactly.
But he's got the second or third best shot that you know.
Yes.
And you put it all together and the combinations.
The mix of
like Federer's serve and his forehand after the serve. It's the combinations which are often
It is the
so
combinations.
Vital.
And that's what made Djokovic, Federer, Nadal the best of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Wow, we built an incredible player. I'll tell you, the name that came out more in our conversation is Federer and Djokovic.
And Sampras got quite a few mentions.
And Nadal, strangely enough, between us, is not here.
Well, Steve mentioned him in three of the 10 categories, I think.
How can Nadal not be in our list, Jim?
Because he's probably number three or four in the categories, in all the categories.
He has 21 Grand Slams, okay.
Yeah, actually, Steve, who's a big Nadal fan, mentioned him as number one in two of the 10 categories.
There you go.
But he'd be close in all the others, so it's the spread.
The guy might be the best of all time.
Yeah, it's looking pretty for him at the moment, isn't it?
Yes, it's unbelievable. I guess Nadal was mentioned in the mentality. The tennis player that we just built is a tennis player that would win everything. Would never lose.
We didn't mention the category, actually, I thought of.
Bring it on.
Versatility, how good you are on each service. So, you know, if you're building the perfect player, you want them to be versatile.
True.
You know, perhaps our perfect player might be good on hard courts, but not
Djokovic
so good on clay.
Djokovic is the number one there.
Yeah, Nadal's not far off. I know Wimbledon is maybe his weak spot, but he still won it twice.
True, but Djokovic is winning more, no?
Yeah, the French, he started to show, look, you know, I'm a serious clay court player, even at the biggest one. Yeah. I don't just win the warm-up tournaments like he used to.
It's a good question, that one. I think that Djokovic is the most complete when it comes to all. What about you? What name would you choose then for versatility?
I would say Djokovic. I would say Nadal wouldn't be far behind.
True.
Though I think it comes down to fitness. Nadal, if he wins the French, he's often too tired.
Yeah.
For Wimbledon. Yeah, Djokovic is probably the most versatile. Going back years, Rod Laver, he won all titles.
True.
Agassi. Mm-hmm.
Agassi was good at everything.
He did that, maybe underperformed on the clay in his later part of his career.
But he did win one, so.
But that's why I prefer Agassi to Sampras, because he could play on all surfaces.
And not only, he was cooler.
Yeah, he was. And he was more of an underdog.
He was
more
awesome.
An underdog too.
So I think we built a great tennis player. There's a few.
I hope so.
Yeah, great. One day we'll build the perfect tennis player for the amateur level. Now, I have a couple of pointers before we leave.
Of course.
Can I pass it by you?
Yes.
Okay, one of them. Okay, one word on Barty and one word on Świątek, number one in the world.
Yeah, Świątek's number one in the world. I don't mean to pop your balloon, David, because it's a great achievement. But to me, the most important thing is, will she be world number one at the end of the year? That's the
No, I understand.
For
but for example, Medvedev as well, for the first time, 1 week has number one. Isn't that a great achievement? One day you sit down with your grandchildren and you say, I was number one once.
Yeah, but
even
then,
if for a day.
Your grandson goes, oh, when was that? And I go, that was on March the 5th. And he goes, oh, and where were you at the end of the year? And I said, well, I slipped to number seven.
So I
think it's a great achievement, but I want to be world number one at the end of the year.
So why is that important? December more important than January?
Good question, I suppose, because you've completed the whole tennis year. This is how I see it. Though the rankings are slightly
so
different,
aren't
they?
So here's a good question for you.
You've got me on the back foot.
No, here's a good one. So I'll be number one in the world January to November, and then you'll be number one in the world in December at the end of the year, which has more value.
That's a very good... I stand corrected.
No.
How I see the rankings, just very briefly, and I know one day we'll have a thing about this.
We have to.
I see it as a race, like the Formula One thing.
Yeah.
So you have a driver's championship, and at the end, someone's crowned. But actually, the tennis rankings aren't really like that,
are they? They're not. Yeah. It's true. We have to talk about that. It's a shame,
but that's how they should be.
I understand where your logic is coming
from. And I remember that
year
Murray and Djokovic faced off in the ATP Tour End Finals, and whoever won would be world number one.
Yeah.
And that was exciting.
I agree with you. There is something special about reaching the end of the line as number one.
Because there's a break, isn't there?
There is a little break
after the Davis Cup.
So there's value in there. There's value in what I'm countering, but there's also value in what you're saying.
We both won.
So I have to say that I'm very disappointed that Barty has given up, although good for her if that's what she wants, because she was actually bringing a type of tennis that we don't see so much in the women's. It was very complete, Federer-like tennis. I mean, tearing apart players just with a slice. I'm very happy that Świątek is number one now, and Medvedev is now starting to become number one and might become a number one for a while. Any comments?
The slice that at my level is seen almost kind of, holding shot, treading water. But if you think about the word slice, you slice meat. It's a weapon, isn't it?
It is a weapon.
And it certainly was a weapon for Barty.
It's
a cliche, but she had that variety. She wasn't just whacking it. And for me, it was so nice to have someone other than Serena Williams or the Williams sisters dominating tennis quite a while. She's the holder of two Grand Slam titles, isn't she? So that conveyor belt of a different champion each time, she broke that, albeit briefly.
We thought
she's going to be the one, the duck that everyone at the fair wants to shoot off the pedestal, which would be good for the game. But no, like an N. Arden and Kim Clijsters, she's retired. She likes a lot of other sports.
She does.
You know, she saw golf on TV one day and said to her coach, that looks fun. And the next day she shot 80 on the full golf course, which is incredible.
Incredible, We're going to miss her for sure. You bring up a very important point. Finally, we were having somebody dominate a little bit more in this kind of...
A figurehead.
Yes, this lost women's tour that has a winner every tournament. But hey, Świątek won 3. I'm keeping my hopes high for this girl, and she's 20 years old. Very young.
Already
number one in the world.
She seems to have that attitude that we mentioned
earlier.
Attitude,
old-fashioned feeling about her as well. She has all the shots, she has the skills.
And like I keep on saying, boring the viewers, is you break through, you have a great year. You become the player to beat, you have a bad year.
Yeah.
Relatively bad year. And then you come back stronger.
All right. Thank you for coming, Jim. And
thank you.
See you next time.
God bless.